coming to you live from Fred's apartment in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina. It's another episode of Album Swap.
And welcome, Album Swap, the podcast where we swap albums, discuss them. We go through a couple of cool segments where we ask questions, maybe give a score. This is episode 15. I'm Fred Dees. Brian, my partner in crime.
That's right. Episode Kinsey, as I like to call it.
Yeah, episode 15. if we were a human, we would be able to drive while supervised.
We get a learner's permit.
Yeah, learner's permit. 15. Crazy. Episode 15, a quick kind of recap what we do. We switch albums, or swap albums, I guess, as we should say. And then we review them. We have a couple different segments we've been doing recently where we give the background for kind of the bands and the albums. And then we do what we call the good, the bad, and the boogie, where we give things that we feel are good, bad, and maybe give us that boogie feeling.
The boogie.
The boogie. And whenever we get to that segment, if this is your first time listening, you'll get kind of, you'll get some more clarity whenever we get to it.
If it's their first time listening, then welcome.
Whoa, yeah, welcome. Welcome. Take a seat.
Welcome to the swap.
Happy to have you.
Here we are, episode 15. Fred, what do you got for us?
Right. And then at the other segment is questions. We just come up with a question and ask based off of the album. So, I think the last one after that we score it. So that's your recap. That's your menu, your itinerary. Buckle your seats. We got two good albums this week. I gave you Childish Gambino, one of his, I guess it was his most recent one, right?
Awaken My Love.
Yeah, it was his most recent, right? Awaken My Love was his most recent. Was just recently.
It's up for Grammy. Just recently. That's how recent it is.
Yeah, recently nominated for Album of the Year. I heard it a while ago, I feel like, and it was surprising to me because Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, for people who don't know, he is an actor on the show Community, or the former
Community.
Show. Former show Community.
And a writer.
And a writer. Atlanta is his show now. It's a great show. The guy is incredible. Like, he's just a genius. Kind
Multi-talented.
Of. Very, you could say that. That'd be an understatement. But the album before this one was way more like rap, and it was awesome. Loved it. So whenever this came out, it was something I wanted to listen to because it was so different. And then when you listen to it, it's like opening up a present, and it's just so many things inside. It's a great album. Was pumped to give it to you, episode 15, and finally got it to you. So yeah, so excited to give that. Excited to see all the little morsels that you were able to enjoy.
Oh, there's a lot of morsels in
this. A lot of morsels.
Let me tell you.
It's a morsel-heavy album.
It's Funkalicious.
Funkalicious.
Yeah, so Awaken My Love, who I have to tell you, every time I hear the title, it kind of reminds me of Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber when he says, "Goodbye, my love," out the window.
Okay. And you got to use the quotation marks
when
you
say it, too. Quotation marks. Yeah. And I gave you probably one of the hidden gems of the early 90s, grunge, and I hate to use that term, movement. The Screaming Trees, Sweet Oblivion, came out in, was it 91?
92.
Yeah. I was going to say 92. Came out in 92. It's a band out of Seattle. They're originally from a smaller town called Ellensburg. I've actually driven through that town on my way to Seattle once. It's a beautiful little town in the mountains, nice. Or at the foot of the mountains. I got a chance to see these guys and meet these guys years ago. My buddy, who was the roadie, Jim Schoaf, worked for them, and we got a chance to hang out and meet the band and talk to the guys. Wasn't as huge fan of them immediately, but this was like the album that where they kind of got it all together from a songwriting standpoint and tried to get big during that whole movement, but they really didn't. They're actually on the single soundtrack with Pearl Jam and all these other fantastic artists,
right.
But they're probably the
singles is the movie Cameron Crowe.
Yeah, Cameron Crowe came out with right at the time, based in Seattle.
Yeah, about 91, 92.
And Eddie time. And Eddie Vedder and Chris Cornell are in it, and I think Stone.
Yeah, that soundtrack actually went platinum. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and that's probably soundtrack. Where more people heard him was on that.
That one song was their like most played because of that soundtrack, no doubt about it.
Yeah, yeah, and they had a video, but the video was terrible. Got to see these guys several times. They put out a couple more albums after this and then broke up. Lead singer Mark Lanegan has gone on and made multiple solo albums. There's been spinoffs. We'll talk a little bit about it when we talk about the album. But very interesting band nonetheless. And like I said, this was the one where they really kind of, I thought, like broke past kind of the weird psychedelic college rock that they were doing beforehand and really put out a really cool, you know, rock album.
Yeah, and I didn't know anything about them. I have no real background, so it's interesting. I think we'll get some cool takes on this because you knew these guys. You've heard every note they've ever done. You've seen them live. And this, I have this one snapshot of the band, and it's Sweet Oblivion. So that'll be interesting. And but yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We'll get into the backgrounds on the albums next. So sit tight. We'll be back.
You're listening to Album Swap, and we'll be right back.
And we're back.
Segment two. Little background, little discussion about the bands. This is the part where we will each take the album that was given to us, and we'll give a little background just to kind of show you guys and gals what we learned when we did our homework this week. And Brian, I hope you did your homework.
I always do my homework.
Good. That's good. Good. All right. Well, I'll start it off. Screaming Trees. Like you said, they're a band formed out of a small town in Washington, about 100 miles out of Seattle. 1985 is when they were formed, which coincidentally is the same year I was formed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a great year. It's the year I graduated high school.
Wow, there you
Class
go.
Class of 85, baby.
85, there you go. It's a great year. So they were formed, the original group was four guys. Two of them were brothers. Gary Lee played guitar. Van played bass. They were the Connor brothers. Mark Lanigan was vocals and guitar. And then Mark Pickerel was the drummer when they first started. And then these kids were, it was kind of that, you're not typical. Well, I guess, yeah, kind of typical story of neighborhood kids that meet and play in like a garage, and that's how they kind of start playing. Rather than in a garage, these guys played in the Connor family's video rental store.
Nice.
Which you can
imagine. Oh, that's right. I do remember them saying one of their parents owned the video rental
store. I mean, you can imagine that these stores have like probably a lot of room. So they were practicing in there. They would, I think it said like filming videos, recording, you know, I mean, whatever. Like I said, like that's stereotypical story of the group of kids in small town America that meet, and they all probably like this, you know, they're the guys in the group that like the same kind of music, and that's how they gravitate to each other.
The cool kids.
Yeah, the cool kids.
Can you imagine also like in 1985 somebody going to like rent, I don't know, like Die Hard, and there's a band jamming out in the back room. Like, that wouldn't have happened in North Carolina, but I could definitely see it happening in
right outside
Pacific
Seattle.
Northwest, because it was so much more laid back.
Sure. So, yeah, so that's how they started. Whenever they were, you know, starting to record themselves, they got together and were kind of making their own music. They, like I said, they were working on videos, and they went into a studio and put out a demo. It was a local studio, and whenever they put the demo out, they convinced them to release it on a local indie record label called Velvetone. This basically gave them the opportunity to get their music out more specifically on local indie radio stations. From this, they put together a small, short little album that they released also on Velvetone, again, just releasing out indie stuff. It wasn't necessarily getting to the right hands until they released that first album on Velvetone, and that's when SST, which is a record label that's come up on previous album swaps, was it Firehose? Firehose is an SST.
That was probably the only one, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the only one.
So far. There will be more.
So SST noticed them and signed them in 1986. 1987 was their second album, and it was the first that they released on SST. So the second album, their second album, first on SST, again, Even If and Especially When. Love that name, by the way.
It's a great name.
That, not only did that get them to a bigger label, really, I mean, their first, not I guess major label was SST, major label.
No,
not,
SST was underground. I mean, like Black Flag.
Yeah, but it was still, so they stepped
I mean, they had gotten big because they did have bands like Black Flag and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, but they stepped... I was more saying that SST was a step up from the indie label, the local yes, indie label they were yeah. on before.
So it was a bigger... It was probably one of the bigger indie labels that had not been
right.
acquired.
It was a step up. So they were basically climbing the ladder, right? They're climbing the ladder. Whenever they signed with SST and put that first album out, that also put them on tour with bands like Firehose and Meat Puppets, which got them to a bigger audience. The movement was kind of starting to happen, too. This was 1987, so grunge was brewing. A lot of that 90s rock was starting to bubble, kind of, especially in that area in Washington. So they would do two more records with SST before signing with their first major label, and that was 1990. Epic Records called them up and signed them. Their first album with Epic Records was called Uncle Anesthesia, and it was produced by one of your favorites, Chris Cornell.
Chris Cornell produced that album, and I've got a great joke for you on that. So my buddy who toured with the Trees also had toured with Soundgarden right before that.
Jimmy, right?
Jimmy.
The roadie.
And he asked the guys in the Trees if Chris Cornell, when he produced the album, did he wear a shirt? And they're like, why? And he's like, and he was like, because he never wears it on stage.
That's fair.
And it was funny just because at that time, all the pictures you did see of Cornell, he never had a shirt on.
And did he wear a shirt when he produced?
I can't remember what they said. I think they said he did. But well, in the back of my mind, I could see him...
Shirtless.
Shirtless, sitting back there being a badass, like, you know, give me more, guys.
Oh, yeah. That's Chris Cornell. So Chris Cornell produced Uncle Anesthesia. That was 1990. So 1990 was the takeoff point for what happened in 91.
They were
right?
getting big.
So 91 comes, and not only did grunge really take off with Nevermind by Nirvana.
Who? Was,
yeah, exactly. Nevermind, the album by the band Nirvana, in 1991 was released. And that kicks off grunge, basically. So the worst thing that happened to the Screaming Trees when that moment happens for grunge is that Van Conner, their bassist, leaves. He goes on a brief hiatus to join Dinosaur Jr., and also another popular band, and tours with them for a bit. So it kind of leaves Screaming Trees hanging. So they don't really have any – they don't have a band. They can't put music out. This was also the time where they added Barrett Martin, who took place of Mark Pickerel on drums. And adding Martin was big because it kind of completed 1991 for him. After you have one of your founding members leave, grunge music takes off. Then you add Barrett Martin, who turns out to be one of the more important members of the band for their duration. And Van also ends up coming back, and then they get in the studio in 1992, and they release Sweet Oblivion, which is what we are discussing today. Before we get into the kind of the background of that album, after Sweet Oblivion, it was mainly downhill for Screaming Trees. Sweet Oblivion was their peak. That was their most successful album. I think it sold like 300,000 copies, which at that time was the most for them, or still is the most for them. 11 tracks, 46 minutes. Again, first with Barrett Martin on drums. Two singles on it, and one was the big one, Nearly Lost You is the name of it, and it was on the single soundtrack, which was a movie that Cameron Crowe did, kind of highlighting the Seattle music scene. Not specifically, but it highlighted the Seattle music scene.
It took place in Seattle.
Exactly. And that soundtrack ended up going platinum, so they were a part of that, and that kind of kicked it off. So this moment, 1992, Sweet Oblivion was their pinnacle. After that, they toured for about a year in support of the album. During that year, like happens to most bands, they didn't get along at all. At all. And so they went on a hiatus after that. It took them about 4 years, maybe a little bit more, after Sweet Oblivion before they released their next album, which was called Dust.
Dust,
yeah. And a lot of the music historians kind of credit that gap in time as one of the major reasons to why they fell apart. Because there was this moment in 1991, 92 where grunge is taking off and Screaming Trees puts out their best album, and then they get into a fight and disappear for a couple years.
They tended to break up and split apart and go into various projects.
Yeah, like guys would go play with other bands, yeah. Or they would have their own, like Mark, the lead singer.
Yeah, Lanigan put out several solo albums.
Had a lot of solo stuff,
and that
yeah.
was part of the reason why they would not be playing together, because he's like, okay, I just did an album, I'm going to go tour.
Barrett Martin would go and play on like a Brazilian record in Brazil.
I don't know if he had done it at that point. You know, he was playing with a lot of, well, he played in Mad Season with
right.
Lane Staley and Mike McCready of Pearl Jam. So he did some project bands. He was probably doing some session work and stuff like that because Seattle was so hot at the time. Yeah, he later played for REM when Bill Berry stopped playing.
Yeah, he played with a lot of people. I mean, currently, I think he's like studying to get his PhD in anthropology or something in New Mexico.
Studying drums and the effect that percussion has on
people. Yeah, it's amazing. So definitely a guy you want to have a beer with, whatever. Yeah. Another little cool fact, aside from being called the Godfathers of Grunge, Screaming Trees had Josh Homme in the band for a bit.
Yeah, so Queens, the last Queens of the Stone Age, the Dust Tour.
Yeah.
So I actually saw that at the Cat's Cradle in Chapel Hill. And when he came out on the stage, I had not heard of Kyuss.
Which is K-Y-U-S-S. If you've never heard of that band, check them out. They are awesome.
Yeah, if you love Queens of the Stone Age, it's
I'd rather listen heavier. To Kyuss, man, yeah.
See, I don't know.
That desert rock.
The desert sessions are great. I don't know. The first, like, three Queens albums, but I'm a big Queens fan. Josh had come out with them on stage. At first, I was like, who's this other guy? Like who's the second guitarist? And the thing about seeing the Trees live is the guitarist, Gary Lee, will windmill and kind of move around. And he's a big guy, so it's he kind of takes up some room. So the other guys are more laid back somewhat. Except for Barrett, I have to admit. He pounds the hell out of the drums. He's almost like John Bonham back there.
Nice.
They had Josh come in and play, and it was awesome. Because at that point, they'd put out Dust. So they had that and this album of new material. And then maybe a cover or two in there. But that was a show. And in fact, they came out during that show and did a 20-minute medley of this album, of like three or four songs, and just ripped through them. And the reason they did that was that they were sitting on the tour bus because the Sonics were playing in the NBA Finals that night.
They
were waiting for the game to be over. Yeah, we were sitting in the club, like, watching the game on the TV, and it's like, they're not going to come on to like 11:30, 12. Like, they're not coming on to the Sonics or over. And they came out, they blistered through 20 minutes of Sweet Oblivion, and then I think Lanigan said something like, sorry, we came out late, we were watching the Sonics, so, you know, we kind of did that medley for you. It was awesome.
Very cool. And that's the Seattle Supersonics, if any of our listeners are too young to know who Brian is referencing.
It's a basketball team that existed, what, until the early 2000s?
Something like that. They're now currently the Oklahoma City Thunder. So yes. There you go. Yeah. That's really the Screaming Trees. After Sweet Oblivion, like I said, it was downhill. After the Dust Tour, they bounced around. They added different members. They played in different projects. And then in 2000, they officially announced they are breaking up. They are broken up. They are no longer a band. They have disbanded. No future opportunities to see Screaming Trees, but
there will be a big peace offering between Lanigan and the rest of the guys. I would love to see it. I think they would get out there and crush it.
Yeah, so maybe it's possible. Anything's possible. But it's a story that's been told before with bands starting in a garage and getting a little bit of success, but not getting as much. For every success story like a Pearl Jam or a Soundgarden, there's probably 100 Screaming Trees.
Oh, yeah. Tons.
Yeah.
They were, you know, that's the thing. Like, I think a lot of us that were fans of the music at that time felt that they should make it, but it didn't really ever, we didn't see them being as big as Pearl Jam.
For sure. Well, that's the thing. Like, and we were talking about this off camera, but like, the thing with when you think about Pearl Jam and you think about, so like Eddie Vedder, Chris Cornell, Lane Stanley, Kurt Cobain, like these guys, they had this like, there was something to the vocals that had a punch and a sting to it that really got you in and kept you. But when you listen to Screaming Trees, those vocals, it lacks that kind of element, but makes up for it in other parts of the band. The problem is with the mainstream success only latches onto one of those things, and that's having that drive-in vocal, right? So a band like Screaming Trees, even overall, musically speaking, might be just as good, if not better, than those other bands. What attracts them to the mainstream is they lack that one box that they couldn't check.
Yeah, they didn't have, it wasn't as poppy. I mean, this album actually is probably the most poppiest sound to it with the songs.
But yeah, Lanigan, you know, he's a bit brooding, like a Tom Waits, not as gravelly, but...
And that's the thing with Tom Waits. I mean, Tom Waits is great musically, but he's not even mainstream.
Yeah, he's not going to draw a big crowd in. He's definitely an acquired taste. I mean, Mark Lanigan is... been drinking whiskey and smoking a pack of Marlboros the night before, but like to me, that's I kind of like it. I guess in because he was so different, I don't know. It was kind of like refreshing, but I definitely liked it better, say with this album than their previous stuff. Like when I first saw him on the Uncle Anthony's tour, the songs I don't know, it was just kind of weird. And then his voice was good, but like it definitely didn't work with those.
Yeah.
Whereas on this album, I like it because like where they come in slow acoustically, and then he, you know, he's got that you know, and that's what I was telling you. That's where I think that's his spot, like where he comes in there and can kind of comes in kind of a little soft, but then has that gravel to it, and then brings it up. But yeah, he's no Chris Cornell or Layne Staley.
Well, and we were talking too, like the total vocals in Alice in Chains is what helped that too. It wasn't just Layne Staley.
Yeah, true. You got Jerry Cantrell.
And so, and that's the thing. Like, a lot of what I'm going to say is not knocking. It's not a criticism of Screaming Trees. It's more just kind of commentary. So, but yeah, it's like acquired taste, I think, is a great way to sum it up. The more and more I was listening to this album, the more and more I found myself enjoying it. Initially, I really wasn't into it, and yeah, it takes some time. I also think that you can get this feeling that, not that they're holding back, but sometimes when a band plays in a studio, it lacks a certain spark that they have when they play live. And this band, you really get that feeling when you listen to them in studio. Like, the whole time I'm just thinking in the back of my head, like, I would much rather watch this band than listen to
their album. Yeah, they definitely had a lot of energy live. And like I said, Gary Lee's up there windmilling. I mean, all these guys are big. They're like 6'3 and up. And, you know, when you see a guy that's like 6'3 and 250 pounds and he's windmilling and dropping to his knees on guitar...
Pretty
at a
awesome.
Small club stage, yeah, you're just like, wow, you know, that's cool. And first I thought, you know, it was funny, you know, I was like, was he like doing like a Pete Townsend kind of thing? And I asked him once, and he's like, yeah, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm a fan of him, but you know, I just, you know, that's me, that's me playing. And so it was cool. It was always neat to see them play. Both, I got to see them actually play small places like the 930 Club and the Cat's Cradle, and then they were also in like Lollapalooza. The last time I went to Lollapalooza, and we were on a big stage.
That's awesome. So yeah, Screaming Trees, they're a lot of fun. Excited to give my good, bad, and the boogie on them in a little bit. Until then, I'll throw it over to you, Brian. You can give a little background on Childish Gambino.
So, Awaken My Love, the third studio album by the American rapper and singer Childish Gambino. So first of all, the name. I love it.
Gotta love it, man. I was kind of wondering where you were going to go there. I love it. It's so cool, right?
So
it just feels fun to say. Like Gambino, fun word to say.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah,
something about fun. Childish too. Childish.
It's
Gambino. It's fun.
Yeah, childish fun. Is, you know, it's free of all like the heavy shit you're dealing with as an adult.
And they're just fun words to say. Sometimes, yeah. Like, how about this? Pierogi.
Pierogi.
How much fun is that word to say? Pierogi.
There's a lot of fun in pierogi.
Yeah, I'd like an order of pierogies. I'm Childish Gambino. I just had a legit amount
there
of fun saying that. So.
Hashtag Childish Gambino pierogies.
Yes.
So Childish Gambino, this is, as we said earlier, this is Donald Glover from Community, Troy.
The TV show Community.
Which we were talking earlier, and I said I didn't really watch it when it was on, and then I watched it on Netflix.
Right.
And kind of dug it. And I did love Troy and Abbott, like, at the end of every episode, doing their little bits.
Oh, yeah.
And the one where they do Africa from Toto.
Right.
Is awesome with Betty White. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. He's also in Atlanta. Well, I think that's...
he does Atlanta. Show. He's currently doing Atlanta, which I have not seen. I want to see it.
Yeah.
Growing up in Birmingham, Atlanta is, like, second city I know best growing up and going to over the years. Not a huge fan of Atlanta.
I hate Atlanta.
I can't stand it.
Last time I was in Atlanta, I got stuck in the airport for a day.
So all right. So we both got stuck in the airport over the holiday break.
In Atlanta.
Fred got stuck worse. And I guess a week later, I was flying down to visit my mom in Alabama.
And you got stuck.
And I got stuck. And my actually, the flight crew didn't come. They put me up in a hotel. But I texted Fred when I got to the hotel, and I said, Atlanta Airport doesn't like Album Swap Podcast. They've stranded both of us now within like a week's time.
They hate us, that city. Yeah.
So,
Anyway, sorry, Atlanta listeners. We love you. We're just not a big fans of your town.
Yeah. And go Panthers.
This is the third album from Childish Gambino. Came out in June of 2016, so you're saying it's been a while. It's been about a year and a half now that it's been out. This album actually had three singles and is nominated for Album of the Year at this year's Grammy Awards.
Big time. Big time.
The 60th Grammy Awards.
Yeah. It's 11 tracks, right?
And I believe he's performing at the Grammys.
Yeah, he definitely is. Yeah. It's like an 11-track album?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think it is. But no, yeah. It's man, it's great. And it's such a change from the albums that he put out before.
I had no idea that Troy from Community had put out music, as I was telling you earlier. So I really in doing my research on this, I had no idea that he did anything other than just acting. And I knew he did Atlanta and I knew he created that, but I didn't know to the extent that he was a writer. He was a writer on Community and some other shows as well. So this is really, you know, the musical expression of the writer, actor, artist, rapper, musician, Donald Glover. A lot of it that I thought was also interesting was him pushing stuff out via social media.
Yeah.
To release the album, he did, like, performances in Joshua Tree, California, and, like, broadcast them. I don't know if he was using Snap or whatnot. To me, you know, really kind of in touch with where music and where people are communicating now in real time. So I thought that was pretty interesting. This album has gotten great reviews, like Metacritic, which rates on a 1 or 0 to 100 scale, gave it a 77 based on 25 reviews in there. Rolling Stone said that it is an enthralling trip into the land of funk.
Ooh, I like that.
And there's even, you know, he's been written up in the New York Times, he's been written up in New Yorker, and I think part of that is because of his celebrity being an actor and director and all that. But I think part of it is that, you know, he came and created and started going into music and has branched out differently. And this is the third album, total tribute and encapsulation of funk and soul he grew up listening to. Parliament Funkadelic, Prince, Sly and the Family Stone. You can hear it throughout the album.
Yeah, you get a lot of Parliament and Sly, a lot of that.
But just, you know, with the arrangements, having backup singers, having the horns, having that space guitar, that bop sound.
A lot of spaciness, for sure.
The New York Times, in fact, kind of encapsulated that and said it's all at once a homage and a parody. The roots and, you know, from soul and then the kind of eccentricity and utopian kind of spirit that he has. You know, it definitely has a nostalgic sound. When I kind of first put it on, I was like, wow, this is. In fact, I thought it was like a Parliament Funkadelic wannabe band right off the bat.
It's like something from the past, Back to the Future kind of stuff. somebody went to the past and brought some hidden basement tapes from Parliament, and it's actually Childish Gambino.
Several different places gave it top rankings, like their album of the year and such. Not any of the big ones, but so he did get some like praise from some of the more kind of niche publications out there. He sold more than 151,000, so it's certified gold by the recording industry.
Nice. Yeah, it's a ton of listens on Spotify.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I think it's interesting to see something that actually does sell, or a certain amount of downloads of actually being sold, because you don't really hear that anymore.
Like, you know,
multi-platinum.
You know what I find interesting is that, you know, like you said, it got a ton of great reviews, and these people are picking up on all these random little tidbits and things that he did that they love. But like you said, and like I've said before too, one of the things we love about this album is it sounds just like something Parliament did. Mm-hmm. So what's funny is what Parliament was doing in the 70s and 80s or whatnot now is considered like not almost groundbreaking, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, can you hear some of the things that he's doing? And like, what the song is, a Boogeyman or something like that. And it's like, Boogeyman sounds like a Parliament Funkadelic song.
Oh, totally.
Straight away.
Totally.
But Parliament Funkadelic wrote thousands or did thousands of stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like nowadays, because of all this crap music that's out there, when all of a sudden one of these musicians does something that Parliament used to do in 1975, now all of a sudden it's groundbreaking.
yeah. Well, it's like refreshing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why it's groundbreaking. And it's funny that there were plenty of bands back in the 60s, 70s, 80s that were doing these kind of things. Now it's groundbreaking because the overall landscape of music is kind of crap. And I'll get off my soapbox.
This album, as far as rankings, did fairly well. Got up to number 5 on the U.S. Top Billboard 200. It debuted at number 2 on the Top R&B Hip Hop Albums chart. And like I said, and we'll get into it during the Good and Bad and the Boogie, it had 3 singles. Me and Your Mama, Redbone, and Terrified. And we'll see in the next few weeks whether or not he picks up the Grammy.
Yeah. We'll actually see this Sunday.
Is it Sunday?
It is Sunday.
There we go.
There you go. We'll find
out.
I think
was it a year ago that we started the podcast and it was the Grammys weekend, right?
Yeah, you're right.
There you go, people. So
full circle.
Great moments in album swap history.
Just repeating the past. That's all we are. Just one loop.
So that's the background. Like I said, you know, there's a ton of information on Donald Glover as far as what he's acting and directing and writing and all that. I don't want to recap all that. We kind of touched on the main things. So we're going to take a break and come back with the good and the bad and the boogie. And now it's time for the good, the bad, and the boogie.
The good, the bad, and the boogie. So this is a segment where we give what we think is good, what we think is bad, and whatever gave us that boogie feeling. Now, it doesn't have to be dancing specifically. Sometimes that awkwardly cool, neat feeling that feels unique that that album or one song gave you, that's the boogie. That's what we'll talk about. So, and the bad doesn't necessarily have to be like a bad song. It could be like, man, that was bad.
That was bad.
Like the kids, when they say that, it means cool.
Bad means good.
Yeah, bad means good. So, who knows? The cool thing with this segment is, it is going to be subjective every single time. So so I'll start it off. Screaming Trees, name of the band, name of the album, Sweet Oblivion. So my good, bad, and boogie, I'll kind of sum it up because that's going to make it easier to explain it rather than going one at a time. This band, Screaming Trees, really, for me, summed up this idea of that safe, solid, like true to 90s rock sound. Not just 90s rock, more of like a 90s hard rock. Like they kind of took a little grunginess and kind of went a little hard rock. I'll just say a 90s rock isn't really that accurate, I don't think. But more like 90s hard rock. Either way, they are true to that definition. Not a lot of glitz and glamour, not a lot of letdowns, but they're true to that definition. So that's one of the things I really liked about it. Like, you really know what you're getting. Once you finish the album, you really know what you're getting with this band. My good are songs that they were solid to that. Now, one thing I felt like kind of held the band back, and I mentioned in the last segment, was a powerful powerfully driven vocal. Not that it wasn't good, right? Not that it was bad. It's not a criticism. I just felt like, for me personally, it lacked that punch. So my bad are songs that I felt really kind of underutilized the vocal part of the song. So the good are songs that are solid, true to that 90s hard rock definition, but didn't blow me away, but just solid and true, like the band. The bad are songs that I felt like really were underwhelming when it came to vocals and kind of just left me bummed because I felt like they could have done more with it.
You wanted more.
Wanted more. And my boogie are songs that I really felt they, you know, properly utilized his vocals. There's some other elements in a couple of the boogie songs that were just like really killer rock and roll stuff that you can't. The only word that comes to mind when you listen to those songs are boogie. Because, man, you boogie till the break of dawn. So with that said, that's my good, the bad, and the boogie. So now you kind of have an idea of how I'm defining them for this record and this band. So I'll start with my good. I've got three songs. The first one is actually track number one. It's called Shadow of the Season. I love the drums at the beginning because Barrett's on like a bongos or a congas or something like that. Like it's like a hand drum. So I love that. This is also the song where you get the name of the album mentioned, Sweet Oblivion.
Sweet Oblivion.
It's in the chorus, I think.
Yes.
And Mark really yells it out. So this is a song where you really, true to the definition of 90s hard rock, but nothing there to like just blow me away. And I feel like the vocals could have been a little bit better, but it's still an awesome song. And it's my first good.
He starts out with the kind of smoky, shadowy vocals. Which I love. Well, he kind of gets a little bit trolls, but again, for him, it's more of like a raspy, not really a scream.
All right, so yeah, so Shadow of the Season, just rock and roll, man. 90s rock and roll. Definition of it is that song right there.
Yeah, and I love the guitars.
Love the guitar.
He starts out, I think that's the other thing about this band. It's like four really strong musicians coming together at the right time and right place.
Very strong. That's why when there's these songs where I feel like we could up the ante a little bit on the vocals, it's almost frustrating, right?
You're in the front row screaming at Lanigan, you want more.
I want more, man. We'll go down to my second good is actually track number two. And this is the first single off the album. This is their most recognizable song. This is called Nearly Lost You. This was the, just let a little bit of it play to me again. Definition of a safe, solid 90s rock song.
It's got hit pop song written all over it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun, and again, it's a safe, solid 90s rock song, right?
Yes.
It's a good song. Really like it. That's why it's one of my good.
I remember the video for it was pretty poor, too, where they're like playing like a state fair track, you know, like the one that we have here.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like a dirt track, and they're just playing in the middle of it, and there's nobody around, and they're jamming out and all that, but it just, I don't know, kind of didn't really resonate. I mean, I liked it because I liked the band, but then you kind of looked at it and I was like, wow.
So that's like a very 90s thing. Like, you have this great rock and roll song, and then the video is like, what the hell?
Yeah, if the video didn't make it.
It's just like, what? Sometimes, and there were some great videos in the 90s. There were also some that are just like head scratchers.
Yeah. This was one of them.
This was one of them, exactly. All right, so we'll hop down to my last good. It's actually the next song, track three, so that's kind of funny. This was the other single on the album called Dollar Bill. Now, so the last two, the reasons why they were good songs for me is because they were definitive 90s rock songs, right? This song is another one, and the reason why I really like this is because what the other two did as far as 90s rock goes, the one thing that they didn't do was have that acoustic guitar element, which, like, 90s rock loved to use the acoustic guitar with, like, some power, like, somberness there. This song is that, right? Like, just when it starts off, that acoustic, oh, man, like, this feels like that 90s rock, dude. Like, I feel like you could just drop Chris Cornell on this and he would just murder it, you know?
He may have in the that's right. He produced the previous album.
Right. Well, maybe he covered it at a show. Who knows? Anyways, just a great 90s rock and roll song. It's one of those songs that there's nothing really to distinguish it other than it's just a solid track, man.
Yeah, Dollar Bill. This is one of my favorite songs. I think the acoustic coming in and then Lanigan. And like I was telling you, this is where his voice, I think.
I like it, but again, I feel like I need a half a step more. But you're right.
It's just right, dude. It's at the right cooking temperature.
See, but this is a song that I think when we were out there better live, like, this is one of those tracks that I can dig it on the album, but I bet live they absolutely well.
They did, and it was kind of cool where you would have that slower intro, and then it would build up and crescendo really nice.
Right.
No one should hurry up. That's all I seem to do. that no one should deserve ya. That's all I seem to do. I gotta tell ya goodbye, mama. We're taking this too far. Been trying to tell you what's going on. Yeah, yeah. Trying to make it easy on ya. Trying to make it better, make it easy on ya.
All right, and that wraps up the good. So, from the good to the bad. Now, again, the bad isn't, oh, I think this isn't good. I don't think that, you know, it's not like this is actually bad. This is just kind of, I was disappointed, a little let down. So
this is the good, the disappointment.
Yeah,
in
so
the bookie?
These are, I got two tracks, and we'll just play a little bit of them, but they're ones where I felt like they really just kind of shorted the vocals. And it might be that this is an in-studio element.
Maybe they should have had Chris Cornell produce
this. Sure, yeah. Or maybe it's just like these songs were much better live, and when you bring them in studio, the teeth were just taken out of the track, and it just kind of lacked that punch or whatever you kind of need to get excited about it. So we'll play a couple of them. The first one is track number 5. It is called Butterfly. Just listen to it. It just, again, got to give me more.
I'm sick and I want to go home.
Yeah, I'm sick and I want to go. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's elements to the parts of the song that I like. But man, when those vocals are going, there's a bigger part of me that's just like not excited about it. Bum, man.
So Cry Cry Butterfly just doesn't get you with the vocals.
Doesn't quite get me. So that's my first bad. Second bad, track number 6, the next one, Four Celebrations Past. And I actually love the bass line. The bass line on this is so sick. It's but, sick, yeah. Again, the vocals underwhelming. Couldn't get it.
I mean, the guitar part's awesome too.
Yeah.
This is for footsteps approaching the night. They keep themselves moving and do what is right. Now watch what you gather and hold in your hand. Numbers are many, misunderstand. Drink your wine away instead. I won't remember all that said. Say farewell and close the door. You'll find me nevermore.
I like the guitar sounds awesome on that. Like I said, the bass sounds great, but I need more on the vocals. I just need more. And again, I'm sure live I get that extra bit that I'm missing with the studio album.
That or you have to go listen to like the 10 Again solo albums.
And that, maybe I'll have to.
You'll be like, I get it.
Maybe we'll have to do that. All right, cool. So that was bad. We'll hop down to the boogie now. My first boogie is track number 8 called Winter Song. Listen to this song. The vocals straight fit so well. One of the things that helps the vocals fit are the harmonies that back him up.
I love how the guitar comes in here just like the kind of cadence of the downstroke on that, and the Lanigan coming in here with that Jesus knocking on my door, it kind of gives me chills a little bit, because it's, again, I agree, this is like his element for his vocal.
Yeah, but it's not one that calls for him to be like super loud. Like, yeah, he can sing at this level and it fills the song.
And that's like on Dust, they have several songs like that, like Dime Western and stuff like that. It's like a slow kind of cowboy song almost. And him coming in with that raspy vocal, it's perfect. Just a roll of the dice and a precious prize. Bring you around, it's easier when I'm wasting my time and I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, killer solos. But again, like, why that's my boogie is because the vocals fit so well. Like, he's got some parts where he's starting to kind of get louder, but it just really fits that song so well. It feels good because it fits well. It's just a good rock and roll song too. My next boogie, track number 9, hopping right down, Troubled Times. This is a boogie because it's as simple as the vocals fit this song so well.
I would agree, like, if, you know, for that really strong vocal, that's where he probably comes out the most.
But the thing is that I don't want it to be misinterpreted that I'm thinking, or that I'm saying that you need Chris Cornell in this band.
Dude, you're not going to get Mike Patton with Screaming Trees.
That's not, sure. Wow, that would have made that would make it
but
great.
But you know what, I think with Lanigan, like, he fits this kind of mold so well, where they've got this kind of rock and psychedelic sound, slower Western type songs.
That's what I feel like. It's not being interpreted the right way. Like, I'm not saying that you need Layne Staley.
But I get what you're saying, Chris, now, you know, as far as
what I'm trying to say,
it could go up another notch.
What I'm trying to say can be summed up by listening to track number 9 and listening to his voice and how it kind of gets up a level there in the chorus. And how in other tracks before it just didn't. And I don't know why. I think that I really, really, really do believe that the reason was because when you're in studio, sometimes it's just not, you know, you don't quite have that not necessarily a spark, more of a fire. You know, you're in there, you're clocking in and you're going to work and you're getting these tracks down, and sometimes some of their tracks sound like that, especially vocally. Especially when we're talking about the vocals. So whenever you have a track like track number 9, Troubled Times, where he kind of gets out of it, it makes me even more frustrated, because it's like, well, now I know you can do it. I know you just did it.
So this album actually was produced by Don Fleming.
Right.
Who did like Velvet Monkeys, Gumball, Sonic Youth, Fan Club, Hole.
He's in Gumball and Velvet Monkeys.
Yeah.
And he's their front man.
So, you know, it's interesting. you know, them having different musicians come in and produce it to a certain extent. But yeah, it would be interesting if you had Cornell in there. Yeah, maybe he might have.
I just
dropped kick the vocals a little bit. Just more.
Yeah, Lanigan, and give me a little more. Either way.
That more was, Lanigan, more Lanigan, more Lanigan.
Yeah, more Lanigan. So that was my second boogie. So we'll hop down to number my next boogie is track 11, Julie Paradise. This is the most rocking song on the album. So what's funny is my reasoning for the boogies is strictly vocals. This isn't the strongest vocal track on the album, but this is probably the best, just like straight dirty rock and roll, man. So I have one last boogie, but it's a short boogie. It's kind of a bonus boogie, if
you will.
Bonus
boogie.
So this is track number 4. It's called More or Less. Don't want to play the whole song. I really only want to hear like the first maybe 10 to 15 seconds. And tell me. So on a past album swap, we reviewed Neil Young and Crazy Horse. And one of the big storylines kind of within that album is how much influence Neil Young and Crazy Horse had on the grunge movement. And especially like Eddie Vedder, you know, would always talk about how Neil Young really inspired them. And so tell me, when you listen to 10 to 15 seconds of track number 4, More or Less, it doesn't sound just like Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Sounds like Neil and Crazy Horse, but like even amped up another level.
Oh yeah, for sure. And yeah, that wraps it up for me. It's my good, bad, and the boogie, and with a little extra bonus boogie in there, just because I'm nice and that's what I do for the listeners. I give a bonus tidbits of knowledge, passing it out like I'm the lunch lady, man.
It's like Christmas in January in here.
Christmas in January, no big deal. Call me Santa Claus.
Freddy Claus. Fred Claus. Wasn't there a movie about that?
There was a movie. It was all right.
Now it's time for the good and bad of the boogie of Childish Gambino, Awaken My Love, or as I like to say, Awaken My Love, because there is an exclamation mark.
Because there is an exclamation mark.
Or it could be Awaken My Love.
There you go. Yeah,
because who knows? Yeah. Punctuation matters, though.
Punctuation matters.
So my good and the bad in the boogie of this, I kind of broke it down similar to what you did. Overall, in listening to this album, I liked it. I kind of liked the second half of it better. Because I felt he got a little bit away from just this kind of funk sound that definitely has a lot of overtones of Sly and the Family Stone and Funkadelic, and got a little bit more towards like his own music with still that style and that whole genre wrapped in, but it was less like too familiar of right. like, wow, that sounds too familiar, like something already. And you know, sometimes when you have it too familiar, it's confusing to your brain. I know that's weird to say, but you know, your brain's in the back that's sitting there going like, hey, is this George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars, or is this like, someone else?
It's like you're George Clinton. It's like your brain goes into search mode whenever it hears that's it. Right. It's like, wait a second, I know where that's from. And so you're just, you're searching, and it's actually not. It's his song.
My first good is the first track, Me and Your Mama. I thought this had a really cool introduction on it.
Yeah, it really does.
You know, it's got this like keyboard, you know, starts that space dust sound and all that. So again, it's got that soft intro. Then it comes on so strong.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, again, he's got a much more... This, for an opening track, I thought sounded a little bit more fresh. It's got kind of the space sounds going on and all that. You know, what I was saying earlier, like, he wanted to kind of write something weird, or it's like, you know, he's not afraid of being weird because it's hard to be weird when you get older. He definitely starts it off with, like, a weird tone. He's kind of wailing in the background a little bit.
Yeah, great intro track.
So that's my first like, Me and Your Mama.
First good.
So that's my first good, Me and Your Mama. My second good is the second track, which is Have Some Love.
Love that drum intro.
I love the drum intro.
Sounds like Sly and the Family Stone.
Yeah, this totally sounds like Sly and the Family Stone. It's kind of got that small choir in the background, the drum beat. And he kind of wails in the background a little bit. I like that. I also like the kind of the acoustic guitar that comes in at parts, and it's got the real harmony with it. So that's Have Some Love. It's my second good. My third good is Terrified. This is track number 8. It's so cool.
Love it, yeah.
You know, it sounds like a bass, but you definitely know it's the keyboards.
Keys, yeah.
And then the bubble sounds coming up.
Like that ambient sound is kind of tight. Almost sounds like a Prince song.
Yeah, he definitely kind of has...
The way his vocals are on this
track. When he's soft on vocals, he sounds more like Prince. And then he sounds a little bit, too, when he's screaming it.
But, too, like the music here sounds like something Prince would do. Kind of that like heavy, sexy bass sound with just some ambient sounds, and then his high pitched vocals. Like, that's Prince.
Yeah. So those are the three goods, and there was other good on those, but those are the three that really kind of jumped out at me, which takes me to my bad.
The bad.
And so outside, say the obvious, sounding a lot like say P-Funk on some of these tracks, and that's not terribly bad or anything. It was probably more again like just a bit weird when you first heard it the first time. But so the bad for me was actually there was two songs, one being California. I just didn't like the vocals.
It's a super odd and quirky song. I like California.
Give them credits on, or give them weird points on it. But for the most part, I didn't really get into it at all. She wants to move to California.
Yeah, see, I like it. I feel like it's a good, I think it's like a fun break.
Yeah, it's got like...
And the percussion's
calypso
awesome.
Kind of feel to it or something. So that was my first bad. My second bad is Zombies.
Is what?
Zombies.
I like Zombies too.
Which, I didn't really hate it, but part of it is... And again, he's got the weird going on in the vocals, the way he sings it. But I have to admit, I'm not a big Zombies fan in general. Like, there's too much zombies in our pop culture right now that...
Maybe that's what he's commenting on.
Yeah, and kind of, that's what I thought listening to it a little bit more is like, maybe he's commenting on like, all we keep seeing is zombies that people are writing about. Walking all around us, you can hear them coming. You can hear them breathing. Breathing down your spine. Oh. Zombies. All I see is zombies.
Zombie.
So that's my bad. My boogie, I got two boogies. So the first one is the final track, Stand Tall. To me, this is probably the most personal song I felt based on the lyrics.
It's a great conclusion to the album, too.
Yeah, it wraps it up nicely.
It really does.
A longer track, so he kind of really, they really jam out on this. Like I said, to me, this spoke to me most from him, his emotion coming out. When the sun is rising over streets so barren, since the evening, colors flash before my eyes.
I feel like a child so young and new in 92. I listened to what my father said. Keep all your dreams, keep standing tall. If you are strong, you cannot fall. There is a voice inside us all. So smile when you can, when you can.
So like a lot of tracks, he kind of starts off one way, ends up another. And on this one, I think it really changes. Again, it's a little bit longer song, so it's really almost two songs into one. It's less of an intro that kind of just progresses.
Yep.
So my second boogie is the album cover. The photography is just cool.
Yeah, it is. I love that. I've seen it on some shirts. Childish Gambino will wear that shirt sometimes. It is a dope, dope shirt.
So there's an interesting story behind the album cover art. So it's a frozen face, right? And the question is that face feeling ecstasy, fear, or new life? We don't know.
Yeah.
And it's a wreath in this like bone-like headdress that was designed by this Brooklyn design shop artist that lives up there. I believe her name is Laura Wass. And she had actually had pieces that appeared in like Beyonce's video and such. And I think she said that when they were told they were going to do this for him, they didn't have a lot of time to prepare. And he came in and just like shot it all and did it. And it was a great capture and stuff. So when I first looked at this album and saw the album cover, I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then I was telling you that I didn't know who he was. I didn't know this was Donald Glover, the actor. So I didn't really see it until I like went up and looked at the artist info. And then said, like, oh, okay, yeah, this looks like Troy from Community. And then I was like, okay, it is. I thought the album cover art was really cool. It's got kind of like that iced over in the eyes and stuff like that. That gives it a real eerie look to it.
The tint of blue that's used is really, really cool.
Yeah. Blue. Props to album cover art, because sometimes album cover art's what makes you pick the thing up and listen to it in the first place.
And imagine what this would look like for a vinyl. So like a bigger...
Oh, yeah.
Like a record is going to be pretty big size, and that image taking up almost the whole cover would be super dope.
Yeah. So there's a whole video I found, and I'll share it out on social, from the artist talking about him coming in and shooting this photo. So that's my boogie. So that wraps up this segment, Good, the Bad, and the Boogie, and we'll come back with questions.
Check out the full albums for each episode at albumswap.net.
And we're back. Next segment, segment number four.
Quattro.
We ask questions, and these questions can be anything that we come up with based off of the album that was given to us. It can be based off the album, the artist, whatever, somewhat related to what was given to us. We'll say that. So, this week, my question. Brian, I hope you are ready.
I'm ready.
So, if a tree screams in the woods, but there's nobody there to hear it, does it actually scream?
Yes.
That's not really my question.
It's screaming trees.
That's not really my question, but I had to do it. No, so here's my question. So one of the things that you talked about a lot is this band has like a greatness about them. Like they definitely have their place in the grunge, hard rock. I mean, they're called the Godfathers of grunge. Like they have the place in this era, right? They were better live, the great lead singer, drummer, all the different reasons that you give. Where would you put them as far as not a specific ranking, like, oh, they're number seven, but like where would you put them, at least ballpark wise, when it comes to those bands from that era?
Oh, that's a good question.
Like, where do you place them?
I mean, I love Soundgarden. I love Alice in Chains. I like Pearl Jam. I mean, I love the trees, though. I have to admit. And part of it might be that underdog, they didn't make it as big as everybody else.
Right. So you're, like, personally pulling for them more because maybe they need it more.
Yeah, yeah. And probably out of all those bands, I got to meet those guys more and get to know them. You know, I would probably put them right up there with, I'd say in the top three of like Soundgarden, Alice, and the Trees.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I guess, like, for me, like, I don't know, I like Pearl Jam, but I don't know, they drone on a little bit too much.
They can get on your nerves. They can get on your nerves. Yeah.
And
looking at you, Eddie.
Nirvana, I mean, Nirvana is fantastic, but it really was, I don't know, like, I mean, I definitely love the Foo Fighters way more, but I really wouldn't call them I guess they are a Seattle band.
Yeah.
So, I don't, you know, it's tough. I mean, definitely the Foo Fighters, out of longevity, have lasted longer than any of them.
But you
and have put out more music for the most part.
But how about this? Would you put Screaming Trees on your Mount Rushmore of, like, grunge?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Totally.
So they're on their four.
Yeah.
They're on that big four.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you put it that way, it's like Lanigan, Lane, and Jerry as one head out of Alice.
Well,
Cornell.
No, I mean, I think that's the, like, don't look at it like lead singers. Don't look at it like that. Don't look at it like lead singers.
Well, no, I'm saying who I'm putting on that Mount Rushmore.
Right, well, you're putting hands up there. Yeah.
Well, they're recognizable, the faces.
Sure, but Screaming Trees would be one of your
favorites. Yeah, definitely, totally. Yeah, yeah, definitely. They're in the top echelon for me.
So they'd be in they'd be one of your four faces on Mount Rushmore.
Dave Grohl would be the other face.
So on the Mount Rushmore of grunge, Screaming Trees is up there.
Yeah, Screaming Trees. Okay. People, the one thing we didn't mention was that Lanigan and Cobain were actually friends and did a track together. Where Would You Sleep Last Night?
Right.
Which we'll share out links on that as well.
Cool. That's my question. So
that's a good question.
Question and answer, yes, Screaming Trees would be on Brian's Mount Rushmore of grunge.
There you go. So my question to you is Childish Gambino the reason why Troy wasn't on season 6 of Community?
I don't know that.
That's not my real question.
Oh, okay.
That's more my funny question.
I really don't know, yeah.
No, so my question to you would be more, so he's got these three different albums, you know, rap album and kind of a rock soul album and then this funk album. So which one resonated strongest with you?
The one that resonated strongest with me was this one.
Okay.
The most recent one. Just because the one that got me interested in him was the rap album. I just thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
A lot of the transitions, the way that that's put together, like the production of that album is super cool. Like, it's really neat. Donald Glover is a very smart dude, and so when he's doing anything, whether it be his TV show, his acting, or his music, there's little intricacies that are done just because it's high quality, you know what I mean? And the rap album had a lot of that. Like, a lot of the transitions were amazing. It was almost like put together like an old Kanye West album. Like, just the different songs and the way they flowed together was awesome. So that's what got my attention first. But the one that made me sit back and go, damn, like, this guy's that dude, was the most recent one.
Awaken My Love.
Awaken My Love, yeah, for sure. That was the one, because I just, like, track for track, even the ones, like, California was one of your bads. Like, I didn't love that track, but that makes me laugh, and whenever I listen to it, it's like a percussion, like, I don't even know, a percussion playground almost. Or no, it's like...
percussion playground.
It's a ball pit, like, you know, at, like, the McDonald's or whatever. It's like a ball pit for a percussionist, because it's just wacky and everywhere, but it's all really, really, really good stuff. It sounds like something Mike Dillon would do. If you know, Mike Dillon, like, just his use of the kind of unique percussion instruments, you get that kind of feeling and sense from that California song. So even though I don't, like, love it, it makes me laugh at how, like, good it really is. And, like, that album has so many... I've listened to it over and over, and I feel like I always pick up on something else and another random song that just makes me kind of sit back and again just go, damn.
There's a lot of layers.
So, yeah, no, that was the most recent one. I'm really excited about his next one, for sure. Can't wait to see what this guy continues to put out, both in music and TV. I'd say the future's bright for old Donald Glover.
All right, so that's questions, and we'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Album Swap.
And we're we're back. Final segment, number five.
Ratings.
Ratings. There we go. So we give a score between 1 and 10. Decimal points are encouraged. Brian always goes overboard. We used to do hashtags once upon a time.
What's a hashtag?
What is a hashtag?
Is that like a hash brown?
I think so, but less edible.
Less edible.
Yeah. Okay, so
it could be a tasty hashtag.
Yeah, there you go, a tasty hashtag. Well, we're just going to give a score this time. So we'll give my score, Screaming Trees, name of the band, Sweet Oblivion, name of the album. I gave it a score of 7.8. I'll listen to it again. It'll probably be one that I'll listen to for a while, and it'll probably get better. I could probably see myself giving it above an 8 in a year if I keep listening to it.
There you go. Promises of an 8.
There you go, yeah. But they made your Mount Rushmore, so there you go.
A long-time passion band of mine. And they were also, I guess, off the beaten path a little bit, but still with one foot in, like, rock and roll, like on Dollar Bill and Butterfly and those songs, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was the thing at the time. We were like, why isn't this a bigger song? It should hit. But, you know, now looking back on it retrospectively many years later, it's like, well, yeah, you know, it was a bit of acquired taste.
Sure. But this could be a, like, I hope people listen to this podcast and then go listen to the album, because somebody, if you know, a group of people go and listen to this album and go and listen to this band, somebody in that group is going to love this band. You know what I mean? Because they have that kind of like cult appeal. Like you said, like it's they're almost like a passion band. Like you really have, you, somebody can really sink their teeth into this band and just become obsessed with Screaming Trees.
So that reminds me of a great story going to see them once. Was they came to D.C. I was living in D.C. at the time. They played the 9:30 Club the first night, I believe, on Friday or Saturday. The next day, they played a private show at Mary Washington College, about 50 miles south of D.C. And it was like where the student body hires a band to play like their spring festival or whatever.
Right.
And we got down there. We drove down from D.C. They'd already started playing, and it was like in this like arena. And it's a small college. And it was pouring rain. And there was a bunch of Trees fans, or tree heads, as we like to call them back in the day, standing out in the rain, because you could hear them. It was a small enough venue that if you were standing outside the door, you could hear it pretty good. Anyway, they're out there in the rain, and they're just loving it, right? Their band's in town, and they're playing, but they couldn't get in. You had to have a student ID to get in, because it was for the students, but they couldn't stop them from standing outside in the courtyard in the rain. And anyway, so we got in, and probably like three or four songs after we got there, Lanigan points, it was either Lanigan or Gary, they points at their fans and says, "We're not playing for you guys," talking to the students who had hired him to come play. "We're playing for those guys out there, and those are our fans." And I think the students were like totally oblivious to it. I don't know if they'd been drinking all day or what. But
probably.
And that's what I'm saying. That's to me like one of those nuggets of like why I think they're just awesome. Again, it was easier to do it once, you know, getting to hang out and see them several times. You definitely immerse yourself more if you like the band.
Oh, absolutely. When you know them and you know they're cool, it makes you like them more. But yeah, they're great.
But if we turn one more person onto the Screaming Trees, I'm happy.
That's what I'm saying. Like if a group of people go listen to this band, at least one person is going to fall in love with them. So go listen to them. Screaming Trees, Sweet Oblivion was an awesome record.
That's Fred's rating. My rating for Childish Gambino, Awaken, My Love. I gave this an 8.3. I liked it a lot better after listening to it. I think I told you, listening to it at first, I was like, wow, this is like sounds too much like P-Funk and covers. And so I think once you kind of get past that and then and really listen to the tracks. And so the past couple of days, I really sat down and listened to it. And that's why I told you, like, I like kind of the second half a little bit more. It's like he strayed away from some of that more familiar sounds of those influences and got a little bit more into his. I love that this is someone that I've seen perform in another art in terms of being an actor and such, and then getting to hear them do something different. So I thought that was really interesting because you're familiar with their personality to a certain extent. I definitely want to go back. I listened to a little bit of the second album. I want to go back and listen to the first two. So I really like that. Like it was something that made me want to listen more. And it's definitely a layered enough album that you'd want to listen to it several times. On one of the tracks, I could hear where he's dropping the needle on vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
And you can hear the vinyl crackle in the background, which cracks me up every time I hear it, because I remember hearing that from taping, you know, my vinyl. and always being like, oh, you know, I hate, like, if it was really poppy, you just hated it. You know, you wanted something crisp and clear. And that's why I was telling you, like, why CDs were, like, just so freaking space age when they came out, because it's like, man, no pop, like, you know, and like, you can turn it up loud, it's not going to bounce the turntable and make it skip or anything like that. So I give it that ranking, and with that concludes episode 15. As usual, you can find us out on all the podcast outlets, everything from iTunes to Stitcher, Google Play, you name it, we're there. The other thing I want to remind you is check out the Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, etc. We're always sharing out tidbits, everything from videos and influences of the time, as well as where we're getting some of this research. Fred, your impressions, episode 15?
Pretty good. I'm happy with it. I say we could put a nice little bow on it. We just need people to subscribe. Tell your friends, tell your family.
Yeah, share it, subscribe it, let us know what you think. And until episode 16, we're out of here.
Keep listening to music.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.